Well, hi everybody, and welcome to the Animation Podcast. A weekly podcast about all things animation, brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Look Back and Animat's Reviews. Now, if this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, and if you are a part of the Ugandan Knuckles tribe, well, let me just say that you have officially found the way. The wait is over, the search is over, you are finally here. Because in this episode, I got a whole bunch of juicy stories for you today. And we will be starting this one off by looking into the Golden Globe Awards and mostly focusing on the animation front. Then afterwards, we will be looking into a specific controversy that's actually going on in the live-action remake of Aladdin. Then afterwards, we will be going to San Francisco to an upcoming exhibit in which you're going to be probably pretty hyped up for. Then afterwards, we will be looking into a trailer for a movie in which Disney did not agree to do, but they decided to do anyways. And then finally, we will end things off with Animat's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then all you have to do is head on down to Filmbook, which is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. And so, for our first story that we got right over here, we're going to be talking about one of the biggest news that recently happened this week, which, of course, I am talking about the Golden Globe Awards. Now, this is the award show to really start off the award season. And already we are seeing a whole bunch more just really starting to unravel and really handing out all their awards, because it's not just the Golden Globe Awards this week, but there was also the Critics' Choice Awards. And there have been some different results between the two, but in this case right over here, we're going to be focusing more on the one that's more important this week, which is the Golden Globe Awards. And in here, you might remember some of the biggest moments that did occur, including James Franco winning for Best Actor for his performance in The Disaster Artist, and even bringing up Tommy Wiseau himself onto the stage when he accepted his Golden Globe. And then moments later, suddenly he got bombarded with so many more sexual harassment claims. So yeah, I guess his 15 minutes of fame is pretty much up at this point. And then of course you might remember the big speech that Oprah gave out when she accepted her Lifetime Achievement Award, and already people are just talking about Oprah 2020. Is Oprah gonna be running for president? You know, she can, but should she? That remains to be seen. But like I said before, we are going to be focusing more on the animation front right over here. And of course, to pretty much nobody's surprise, Coco was the big winner for Best Animated Feature. Coco won the award against plenty of other animated features that were nominated, including The Boss Baby, Ferdinand, The Breadwinner, and Loving Vincent. Now, you may remember last time I talked about this in the Animation Podcast, where it is actually a very surprising list, because with Coco, yeah, that's the only one that we know it's in there, we know it's gonna get nominated no matter what, and we know it's going to win, but everything else was quite a surprise, especially with the additions of movies like The Boss Baby and then Ferdinand, two completely random animated features that even beat out some of the more highly rated animated features of 2017, like Captain Underpants, the first epic movie, and the Lego Batman movie. And on top of that, there is also the massive recognition for independent animated features, including Loving Vincent and The Breadwinner. That is definitely uncommon, especially for the Golden Globe Awards. However, I will say, though, that Coco didn't win everything that it has been recognized on, because there was also the category of Best Original Song. And in that one, Coco was nominated for Remember Me, but it actually lost to the song This Is Me from The Greatest Showman. And in that category, there actually have been some strong representation of animation. It's not just Coco with Remember Me, but there is also the Nick Jonas song Home from Ferdinand, and then there's also the Mariah Carey song The Star from The Star. But it looks like The Greatest Showman managed to actually get away with it. Now, of course, there are some surprises, but then again, there's also not much surprises at the same time. I mean, sure, it's actually very interesting, I will say, in general about the Golden Globe Awards, that we did get a bit of a variety in terms of who won, because it's a little bit of everything. It's kind of spread out. Like, you got a little bit of I, Tonya that won, you got a bit of Disaster Artist, you got a bit of Lady Bird, but the big winner, of course, is actually Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, which actually won a total of three of them. And I believe it is both Lady Bird and The Shape of Water that actually got two wins, which Lady Bird got, which I said, I don't think I said it, but you got Lady Bird that won for Best Actress for Sarah Reese Ronan, and it also won for Best Picture for Musical or Comedy. And for The Shape of Water, it won for Best Original Score and also for Best Director for Guillermo del Toro. Now, with this one, I do feel like we are starting to see the footprints of what's going to be going on with the Oscars, because that is the biggest and probably the most important one that's going to be out there, and the one to ultimately cap off the entire award season. And I do have a feeling that we are going to see a bit of repeated patterns. Like, looking into the other award shows that's been going on, I do have a strong feeling that we are going to see some of the same things being won. Like, we're going to see Guillermo del Toro winning Best Director. We are going to see Gary Oldman winning for Best Actor for his performance in Darkest Hour. We are also going to see The Shape of Water winning for Best Original Score. Like, if you do keep an eye on these patterns. Oh, and another one that's going to be repeated a lot. We are going to see Allison Janney winning for Best Supporting Actress for her performance in I, Tonya. And there are, of course, a lot of them that are a bit unpredictable as well. Like, we have seen a lot of them. Some would give it to, like, for Best Picture, for example. Some would give it to The Post. Some would give it to The Shape of Water. And some of it, like in this case, in the Golden Globe Awards, they would give it to Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. So we don't really know where that predictability is going to be. So it is a mix of, so there are some that we know what's going to happen, and there are others that we're not sure is going to happen. And oh, actually, there is another one that would be a bit predictable, just in case, to help you out with your predictions on what's going to be happening with the Oscars. Best Foreign Language Film, a lot of them are going to say In the Fade is actually going to be the big winner. And of course, I mean, it goes without saying, there's a very high chance that Coco is going to be the winner of Best Animated Feature right over here. And with that, it's not really going to be about who's going to be the winner that people are going to be keeping an eye on. It's mostly going to be regarding who's going to be nominated, at least in the animation field, that people are going to keep an eye on, which actually the list of nominations are going to be announced pretty soon. At least as I'm recording this, it's actually going to be coming out in about a week and a half. So yeah, it's just around the corner. Holy crap. You know, honestly, I am actually pretty excited to see what's going to happen there. And I think the big question right now is not going to be regarding who's going to win. We all know Coco is going to win, or it has a very high chance of doing so. It's going to be who's going to get nominated. Are we going to see the same list as we did with the Golden Globe Awards? Are we going to see the same thing with The Breadwinner, Loving Vincent, Boss Baby, Coco, and Ferdinand? Or is it going to be something a little bit different? Now, I have done my predictions before, and I've already stated, like, yeah, we know, like, Coco and Breadwinner are guaranteed to have a spot, but who else is going to be in there shall be remain a mystery. I mean, even if I said before that the Lego Batman movie has a very strong chance, it might not end up getting that nomination after all. We'll just have to wait and see. But one thing I will say, though, that is also going to be pretty interesting to keep an eye on is actually going to be how many nominations is Coco going to get? because we already know right now that Coco is going to get a nomination and a win for Best Animated Feature, and it's also at least going to get a nomination for Best Original Song for Remember Me. But the question remains, is there going to be more nominations that it will get? I mean, there are plenty of other categories that it could be a strong contender in, and it's not that uncommon for a Pixar film to actually be present in plenty of other categories. There are movies like Ratatouille and WALL-E in which they would be prominently presented in plenty of other categories. Sure, it didn't win a lot of them, but you see the name pop up quite often. Like, you never know if, with Coco, it would get a nomination for Best Original Screenplay, or maybe it's going to get a nomination for Best Sound Mixing, or Best Sound Editing, or something like that, or maybe even Best Editing. You never know how many nominations Coco could actually gather. We know there's going to be two, but if there's going to be more, how many? Now, there's a very high chance that if it's going to get more nominations, it's not going to win them all, but it is still going to be fascinating to see how far Coco can actually go with this. But yeah, overall, it's going to remain as a big mystery with that. And even for Best Original Song as well, that is something that we would have to keep an eye out, because sometimes animation can be quite a big contender, especially like what we have seen with Best Original Song. Like in there, like we've seen some animated films in which we would never expect seeing inside the award season. Like, who knew that we would actually mention something like Ferdinand or even The Star? I mean, the $20 million Sony animation film about the birth of Jesus actually getting a Golden Globe nomination, that's a bit unexpected. Yeah, sure, it's for the song and not necessarily the movie, but, you know, still, it is kind of a surprise to see that name be presented at an award show, especially something like the Golden Globes. So you never know if we are going to see another majority in terms of animated films within that category for something like the Oscars. We know Remember Me is going to be in there, but are we going to see some of the other animated films also get a nomination? Who knows? But like I said before, the Oscar nominations are going to be in about a week and a half, so that just it has to be remained to be seen, so who knows. But personally, I am actually quite excited to see what's going on right over there. But with all that said, though, I will say congratulations to Adrian Molina and Lee Unkrich and to the entire crew of Pixar for the Golden Globe win for Coco. And with all that said, let's just wait and see what's going to be happening next year. And on top of that, if you guys are excited to figure out who's going to get nominated at the Oscars, then all we have to do is just wait until January 23rd. Now, for our next story right over here, we're going to be talking about a little controversy that recently happened with Disney. It's not a huge controversy, but it is something that Disney is getting a little bit of trouble in here. And what I'm talking about is actually going to be regarding one of their upcoming live-action remakes based on one of their animated features, which in this case is Aladdin. Now, apparently production is going well, filming is going nicely, and things are still going fine on the set of Aladdin, which is going to star people like Naomi Scott, Will Smith, Misa Masood, and so much more. Or I think that's how you pronounce his name. I do apologize if I do get that wrong. But apparently, as proud as Disney is trying to show the diversity in the production of Aladdin, there is one little thing that they did screw up. And apparently, this is something that people have been saying a lot about this movie, is that Aladdin has been browning up some people. And what do I mean by browning up some people? Well, apparently, It seems that Disney is taking some white extras and tanning them up to pass them off as Middle Eastern people. Just gonna read a little bit here from my source in Vulture. It stated that actor Kaushal Odedra told the Sunday Times that he was on the set working as a stand-in for the lead actor during filming in September and saw a line of 20 very fair-skinned actors waiting to be heavily tanned. When Odedra asked another man on set about the line of white actors, they both decided against complaining. And the reason why they didn't really complain is because they felt like even if they did so, Hollywood isn't really going to do anything about it. It's not going to be like the hashtag Me Too movement. Hollywood is still going to be pulling off some crap like that where they're going to go and change the skin of, or change the color of the skin of white people to pass them off as extras. And in terms of this, what's actually very interesting, and before I get into that, Disney actually did respond to the Sunday Times regarding this controversy, and they tried to defend themselves by saying that they are proud about the amount of diversity that they do have in there. Now, Disney actually stated that this is the most diverse cast ever assembled for a Disney live-action production. More than 400 of the 500 background performers were Indian, Middle Eastern, African, Mediterranean, and Asian. Now, what's actually very interesting right over here is actually regarding the reactions, because a lot of people are pretty split. Now, some people do say, of course, that this is racist, considering that they would actually have some white people going around and putting on brown face in the production of Aladdin, especially for a big budget blockbuster that Disney would be producing. But then on the other hand, you also got some people that really they don't care. They don't really see much of a controversy right over here. And they actually would say that, you know, they're just extras. You know, they're not the main characters. You know, these are just people that would be appearing on the screen for like literally a second or two. And even at that, they would be like very far in the distance. So it's not like you can actually see if they actually are heavily tanned, or you could tell if they're either a white person or they are a legitimate Middle Eastern person. So they're not necessarily all that worried. And I do understand both sides of the argument right over here. But one thing I will say, though, is that as an animation historian, I actually do find this kind of funny. And I know it does sound a little bit wrong of me to actually say that. But the reason why I do find a little bit humorous in here is just I can't help but find the coincidence in this little controversy right over here. Because believe it or not, this is not the first time that Aladdin got into this controversy. And what I mean by that is not the live action film, but the original animated film that the live action movie is based on. Yes, Aladdin did have a bit of a race controversy related to their extras. And I would even dare say that Aladdin is actually the most controversial Disney film outside of Song of the South. And if you guys have watched my videos, then you probably may remember me talking about this a little bit on a video that I've made called the Top 10 Most Controversial Cartoons. And Aladdin was actually on the list. And what I'm talking about is actually the portrayal of the characters, where Middle Eastern people and Middle Eastern representatives, they actually have a massive problem with the portrayal of characters like Aladdin, Jasmine, Jafar, and many others. Because when you look at the heroes, like Aladdin and Jasmine, you see that they are very well built, they're made to look pretty, and that they have light skin. And that they're, you know, and that they're portrayed as good-hearted people who have dreams and aspirations, and someone in which people should really admire and that they really want to root for. But then you have the villains and then you have the extras. Now, when you look at those people, they're very grotesque. Like, they're very caricaturized in their look. And even when you go into the scene where Jasmine disguises herself as a peasant and she would be walking around the marketplace, you would see all the other people and all the salesmen, like, they're made to be look like characterized Saudi Arabians and so much more. Like, you see so many of these people, it's like, oh, would you like a chain for a pretty lady for a chain, fresh fish? And then, like, you, like, they would also be very mean-spirited as well. It's like, what are you doing? Look at this thing. I will cut your hand off for that. You know, they are literally meant to be portrayed as the type of people that would actually cut off your ear, but when they don't like your face, you know, that, you know, those kind of mean-spirited Saudi Arabians, they're meant to be portrayed as those people right over there. And yeah, Middle Eastern people wouldn't have it, and it did cause a little bit of an uproar. And thankfully, I will say, though, that there is a bit of a happy ending, because the directors, John Musker and Ron Clements, did actually learn their lesson. And the next time that they actually would represent another ethnicity, they actually did understand what to do. They learned from the mistakes of Aladdin, and they would nail it beautifully, rather it be with The Princess and the Frog or with Moana. But yeah, all this to say that this is not the first time that Aladdin got into this controversy for related to race and related to the extras. And I do find, and honestly, I do feel like there is a bit of a major coincidence that's going on right over there. And honestly, a part of me, like, going into the controversy itself, I do actually understand why Disney is actually getting some backlash. Yes, I do understand, again, about the comments related that it shouldn't necessarily matter as much because they are just extras, and you wouldn't really notice if this controversy never emerged. But on the other hand, the reason why I feel like this is getting some controversy is the way that Disney is trying to portray themselves. Because in a way, it would seem a bit hypocritical to their image. Because when you think about Disney right now, one of the biggest things they're trying to do is try to embrace progressiveness and diversity. Like, they really are pushing hard in order to have women and minorities to really have the spotlight right over here. Like, you know, they don't want their movies to purely be starring white men. You know, of course, like, there are plenty of examples of women that are going to be the major stars. And then, of course, you got a lot of people of color that they're really trying to push out there and have people of color be the star of the movie. Of course, there's Aladdin and the troubling adventure of trying to find someone that would play as people like Aladdin, Jasmine, Jafar, and the genie. And then, of course, there was also the search to find a Chinese woman to play as Mulan. And they really are trying hard to really show that this is a company that embraces diversity and that they really want to give an equal opportunity to women and the people of color. They want to give them as much opportunities as much as white men would. And then something like this would happen, it would be kind of screwing up with the image that they're trying to portray, that they want to show, you know, like, this is not really something that Disney wants to be seen. Like they're saying that, oh, like, we embrace diversity, we love diversity, meanwhile they're just on the side trying to paint white men as brown, you know? It's a bit hypocritical in their image, and I think that's one of the biggest reasons why Disney right now is getting some crap. But regardless, rather if Disney is going to be doing something about it, rather if this is just going to be brushed off in the wind, who knows, but we'll just see what happens. And if you guys are interested to check out the live-action remake of Aladdin, then all you have to do is just wait until May 24th, 2019 for the release. Or I do believe it's May 24th, but either way, I know it's going to be at the end of May 2019. Okay, so for our next story, let's go ahead and shed a little bit more of a positive light towards Disney. And for this one, we're going to be going into San Francisco. And if you're a Disney fan and you are in the San Francisco area, then you know one of the must things that you have to do is go to the Walt Disney Family Museum, which is pretty much, I believe, the biggest museum dedicated to the man himself, Walt Disney, and the entire company and the legacy that went into it. Now, recently, the Walt Disney Family Museum actually did announce that there is going to be a special exhibit dedicated to a specific animator that has grown a major fan base. Now, in the past, they have done this plenty of times before. They have done one completely dedicated to Andreas Deja. They recently have one dedicated to Ivan Earl. But now, they're going to have one dedicated to Glenn Keane. Yes, beginning on March 8th, the Walt Disney Family Museum is going to be opening an entire exhibit that will pay tribute to Disney character animator Glenn Keane. And in there, they are going to feature many of the works that he has done from movies such as The Fox and the Hound, The Little Mermaid, Tarzan, Beauty and the Beast, and so much more. And they will feature many of his rough animations and maybe some of his cleanup art and pretty much show many of the characters that he has done for Disney movies. But on top of that, they will also be featuring many of the works that he has done after he left Disney. They will feature some artwork made for Neftali, for his animated short Duet, and also for his most recent work, Dear Basketball, which is the giant collaboration between Glenn, basketball player Kobe Bryant, and also legendary composer John Williams. So all that work is going to be presented right over there. And of course, if you guys are listening to this, then you probably know very well who Glenn Keane is. But if you don't, then let me just give you guys a bit of a summary. Among all the people in the Disney Renaissance, or at least the animators working at the Disney Renaissance, Glenn Keane is probably one of the most beloved names out there. And already, he is up there among one of the master animators, like in the ranks of people such as the Nine Old Men, Richard Williams, Don Bluth, and so much more. And he has done a lot of sophisticated and well-crafted animations for some very memorable characters. And he does have a pretty impressive list of the people that he worked on. I mean, he started working at Disney at 20 years old and already, like, he picked up the pencil and worked on characters such as Penny for The Rescuers, and even Elliot the Dragon for the original Pete's Dragon. But then, immediately, he would go ahead and become a big name for himself within the studio, and immediately become a supervising animator for characters such as the Bear from The Fox and the Hound, Professor Radigan from The Great Mouse Detective, characters like Fagin and Sykes from Oliver and Company, Ariel from The Little Mermaid, Marahute from The Rescuers Down Under, Aladdin, Pocahontas, Tarzan, Long John Silver from Treasure Planet, and even becoming an animation supervisor and the executive producer of the 2010 Disney movie Tangled. But I must say, I speak personally that if there is one work that he has done that I would rank as the best that he has ever done, like acting wise, design wise, and everything like that, probably his best work would have to be animating the Beast from Beauty and the Beast. And he truly did craft it himself to fully become the animation legend that we know him today, and one of the most beloved animators of the Disney Renaissance. And I'm just going to say right now that if you guys are in the San Francisco area this year, then this is something truly worth checking out, especially just to see some of the artwork that he has done to admire the works and his contribution that he has done for Disney. And really, looking back at many of the characters that he has delivered us, it truly is wonderful. And the direct impact that he has on Disney and in animation, you know, it truly is inspiring. And even the works that he has done after he left Disney when Tangled was done, you know, those ones as well, they are great to work at. Like, Duet was a beautiful piece. And then there is also Dear Basketball as well. And then you see many of the many of the other works that he has done, and those are absolutely fantastic. Like, Glenn Keane is still out there making great pieces of animation, and yeah, overall, I would say this is definitely worth checking out, and definitely worth mentioning right over here. So, if you guys are in the San Francisco area between March 8th and September 3rd, then go to the Walt Disney Family Museum, not just for the museum itself, but to also check out the Glenn Keane exhibit. Okay, so for our next story right over here, this is just something that I recently found just before getting into the animation podcast, or at least this episode of the animation podcast. I just found this and I looked at the trailer and I thought, you know what? This is actually pretty interesting and worth talking about right over here. I know this is not necessarily an animated film, but considering that we are on a major roll with all the Disney stuff, like with Coco winning the Golden Globes, the controversy with the live-action Aladdin remake, and also the Glenn Keane exhibit at the Walt Disney Family Museum, why not throw this one in as well? And what I am talking about is actually a trailer for a movie that's called The Further Adventures of Walt's Frozen Head. Now, this is another movie that's trying to really advertise itself as a film in which they filmed on Disney property. Like, this movie was actually filmed within the Magic Kingdom at Walt Disney World, but without the permission of the Walt Disney Company. Yes, this is not the first time that you have heard about this, but, well, about this concept at least, but I'll get more into that later. But first and foremost, let me go ahead and just read you a little bit of the description of what this is all about. Now, it says here on my source here in Slash Film, it says, "The Further Adventures of Walt's Frozen Head is a quirky comedy about the unlikely friendship between the frozen head of Walt Disney and Peter, a Magic Kingdom cast member. During his yearly de-thaw to oversee the direction of his company and guard his creative legacy, Walt demands to be allowed to see his final dream, Walt Disney World. When management scoffs, he recruits Peter to kidnap him for a day in the Magic Kingdom." And that's pretty much what we see in the trailer here of Walt's Frozen Head, where Walt Disney is not satisfied over the fact that he is not allowed to go in the outside world. He must stay within the secret, like, Disney vault or whatever to check out what's going on with within the world of Disney. But then you got this down-on-his-luck cast member who's now working at Walt Disney World named Peter, and he stumbles upon this place where he shouldn't be and meets up with the frozen head of Walt Disney. And I will actually say right over here that, honestly, looking at the trailer, it does seem very promising. Like, the one thing I will actually point out that's actually pretty good is the acting. A lot of it in there does show some pretty good performances. Like, you see Peter as a bit of this nervous guy, and, like, sometimes he can have some quirks here and there. Like, he can be funny. And, especially, I think the standout performance is actually the frozen head of Walt Disney, where he does have a bit of a J.K. Simmons vibe into him, where this is the kind of role that J.K. Simmons would actually play, and even his tone actually sounds a little bit similar. But yeah, overall, it is actually kind of funny seeing some of the performances. And Also, there are some moments in here that I do laugh, and there is a little bit of heart into this. Like, I could see a little bit of the heart and the kind of message that it wants to show, that sometimes you gotta let go of your own dreams and give it to the hands of someone else. So it does look like something that could be promising as an enjoyable comedy with a lot of good laughs and a lot of good heart and some great performances. But there is actually something that is very worth mentioning, and that is actually the actor playing the frozen head of Walt Disney. And it's actually a familiar name for Disney fans, named Ron Schneider. No, this is not really related to Rob Schneider or anything like that. Ron Schneider is actually the same actor that would play the meet and greet character of the Dreamfinder from the Disney attraction Journey into Imagination. So during the years that the original Journey into Imagination ride would be open at Disney World, Ron Schneider would actually be the guy playing as Dreamfinder outside, just meeting with people outside of the attraction, giving out autographs, interacting with guests, and all that kind of stuff. So he really did play a big part in Walt Disney World. And, you know, in a way, it does seem a little bit fitting to see the guy actually playing the real Dreamfinder himself, but as a frozen head, and can often be a little bit cranky at times as well. But as promising as this trailer looks, there's a part of me that cannot help but feel like I have to be really cautious about this one, because this can actually turn out to be a major piece of crap. And I'm saying this because of my experience with another movie in which it really tries to advertise the fact that it filmed on Disney property, but it wasn't allowed, or it didn't get permission from the Walt Disney Company, which is Escape from Tomorrow. Now, if you guys have watched my videos, then you're probably familiar with Escape from Tomorrow, since I did review it. And I'll be honest, it's one of the stupidest films that I've ever seen. I mean, it's a movie that really is trying so hard to take itself seriously, trying to show the dark side of Disney. And even if the actors are doing the best they can, it's mostly within the writing and the directing that's just an entire mess. And even the way that they are trying to take themselves seriously and show the dark side of Disney, as a Disney fan myself, I'm just looking at it going, okay, well, if you want to show how evil Disney is, then what the fridge are you doing that the Haunted Mansion did not already do? You know what I mean? So yeah, it really, like, Escape from Tomorrow really was a terrible mess, and it did kind of traumatize me from any of the other experiences of the type of films that people would actually do that. Now, of course, Escape from Tomorrow was not the first movie to actually do something like this. There are plenty of other projects that did do that even before Escape from Tomorrow. There was something called Exit Through the Gift Shop, and there was a viral video that went around, which is a short called Missing in the Mansion, which is a found footage horror film themed around the Haunted Mansion. And it's because of this, especially regarding from Escape from Tomorrow, that it does make me a bit cautious about the further adventures of Walt's frozen head, that it might turn out to be a piece of crap where it's trying so hard to heavily advertise that, oh, they didn't get permission from Disney to actually do this, but they're filming at the Disney parks anyways, and they tried their best to avoid all the security to do so, you know, just to bring it to you. But really, like, I went through that before, and it was a bad and weird, confusing experience. So I don't know how this is going to be. But then again, there is a bit of a bright side to this, and that is actually regarding the Florida Project. Now, that is actually a recent film where, in a way, it's a bit similar to movies like The Further Adventures of Walt's Frozen Head or Escape from Tomorrow, where they did film a bit on Disney property, but not really. It's almost like, it's pretty much borderline. And I mean that literally and figuratively, since it is pretty much filmed in Kissimmee, Orlando, Florida. And in there, it's pretty much around, it's pretty much filmed around the area that's not in Walt Disney World. Like, they are outside of the gates of Walt Disney World, and we are seeing the life of this poor family, pretty much living their life outside of that area and what they're trying to do in order to just survive and live life in general. And that one is a highly praised feature film, and it's already getting a lot of recognitions in award shows, especially the fact that the biggest thing that people are praising in there is actually Willem Dafoe's performance. And that one is already getting a whole bunch of awards. So who knows what the further adventures of Walt Frozen Head could turn out to be. Maybe it could turn out something as charming as the Florida Project, or it could turn out as a disaster like from Escape from Tomorrow. So apparently we don't really have a release date right now. Apparently the website is saying that we are getting it this year, but we'll have to wait and see with what the fridge is going to be going on with Walt's Frozen Head. But hey, it's definitely an interesting thing worth talking about. And, you know, you just gotta see the trailer. Like, you know, it's weird, but trust me, you just gotta. It is fascinating. And so finally, we are now gonna go and end things off with Animat's pick of the week. And this week, I decided to save the best story for last. And this is actually going to be related to an animated feature that's going to be coming out in 2018. And my God, this is going to be the biggest, the most anticipated, and possibly the greatest animated feature that we are getting this year. I mean, when you look at plenty of the other movies that we are getting in 2018, I mean, yeah, sure, some of them do sound nice, some of them do sound pretty fun, I guess, you know. We are getting stuff like, what, The Incredibles 2, Early Man, The Isle of Dogs by Wes Anderson, Ralph Breaks the Internet, Wreck-It Ralph 2, those are made by amateurs. Who the frick cares about those petty little cartoons? What we got right over here is a real animated feature by real filmmakers, and they will show us how real animated movies are done right over here. But not only that, we're gonna see how real superhero movies are going to be made. Are you guys ready? Cause I sure am ready. We are gonna be talking about Teen Titans Go to the Movies! Woo! Oh yeah, boy! Just by saying that, I'm already excited for the entire trilogy to come out! Oh yeah! Woo! Well, I certainly have my fun right over there. But yes, in all seriousness though, just in time for the release of Paddington 2, Warner Brothers decided to go and release the teaser trailer of one of their upcoming animated features, Teen Titans Go to the Movies. And in here, they don't necessarily show much of it. Now, first and foremost, of course, this is based on the highly successful Cartoon Network series Teen Titans Go, which is a remake of the 2003 animated series. And in here, what we see in the trailer isn't necessarily much. It is a teaser trailer, so they wouldn't necessarily go into the story. And this is a relatively short trailer. I mean, it's just over a minute. And I guess the best way to say it is the fact that this trailer is actually cut into three segments. First, you got the intro, where you see the Teen Titans are ready for their big screen debut, but they're all dressed up as Wonder Woman because people want more Wonder Woman. And then right afterwards, we see a little clip from what could be in the movie where the Teen Titans are fighting off this giant bad guy, and then suddenly someone made a hole in his butt, and suddenly there's this long fart that would go out of it. And then finally, we got the title saying, Teen Titans Go to the Movies, and ends off with the tagline that if Aquaman gets a movie, then literally anybody can. And that's pretty much all that we see. And of course, as you guys probably know, or maybe you are one of those people that are a part of this, but the thing with Teen Titans Go that really is worth talking about is that this probably is one of, or it is the absolute most hated animated series out there, or at the very least, the most hated animated series that's currently running on television. This is the kind of series that when people hate it, they absolutely despise it. Like, I really do mean that they hate it with a passion to the point that they will not rest and they will not find inner peace until the day that Cartoon Network decides to cancel Teen Titans Go and that it would no longer air on television, period. Like, that's all that they want. And there are a variety of reasons that I have heard why people absolutely hate Teen Titans Go. And these explanations, like, they go beyond the fact that, oh, this show sucks and I hate it and all that kind of stuff, you know? I've heard reasons about the fact that Teen Titans Go would troll their haters from time to time and the people that hate the show. Like, I guess it just adds more fuel to the fire in a way. That and also the fact that Cartoon Network would always be airing Teen Titans Go. Like, if there is something in their time slot that they don't know what to put up, then they would put in Teen Titans Go. And there have been cases before in which Cartoon Network would fill, like, literally half the week with nothing but Teen Titans Go. So that's where the hate would reside. Now, maybe I have said this before, but for me, with my personal relationship with Teen Titans Go, I have never actually seen the series itself. I have never seen a single episode of Teen Titans Go. Maybe I have seen some clips of it, but I haven't seen an entire episode of Teen Titans Go. And I'm not the kind of person that actually does jump into the hate bandwagon of Teen Titans Go. But there is also one interesting to note is how there are also a lot of YouTubers out there that really do capitalize on the hate of Teen Titans Go, where they actually would get hundreds of thousands of subscribers just by making videos and sometimes a lot of repeated videos about how Cartoon Network has a lot of problems and why they should hate Teen Titans Go and why Teen Titans Go is part of the problem that Cartoon Network has. And all that kind of stuff. So there are some people that really are capitalizing on the Teen Titans Go hate. However, I will say that after watching this trailer of Teen Titans Go, I'm not gonna lie, I like it. This was legitimately funny. Like, no joke, I enjoyed this and I laughed at this much more than I did with the trailers of Sherlock Gnomes and Hotel Transylvania 3. I really do find this funny. And I'm not saying that ironically, this is like, I'm not even saying that as like a so bad it's good in a way. I actually do think this is legitimately good. And before any of you just burst out in rage and like destroy your keyboards, allow me to give a bit of my explanations onto why I find this enjoyable. Now, like I said before, it's pretty much cut into three parts, two of which I actually really did like. I really did enjoy, and I really bursted out laughing. First, it is the intro, and probably my favorite part of the entire trailer is when Robin comes in and tries to say, like, hey everyone, we're the Teen Titans, and we're finally gonna have our movie! And then everybody comes out dressing up as Wonder Woman, because they're trying to explain that nobody is really here to watch Teen Titans Go. They want to see more of Wonder Woman, which I do find really funny because this really is a satirical take on how the DC Extended Universe is really trying to capitalize on the success of Wonder Woman. And there is a lot of truth of what Teen Titans Go is trying to say with that, because when you do think about it, back in 2017, one of the biggest movies that was released was actually Wonder Woman, and it is the most successful DC Cinematic Universe movie out there, not just in terms of the box office, but also in terms of critics and audiences. This is unanimously agreed to be a fantastic film, and some people would even debate if it could actually be equally as good or even better as the Marvel movies that have been released during that year. And then afterwards, right after that success came in, Warner Brothers decided to go and do a lot more reshoots on Justice League in order to have Wonder Woman be prominently featured a lot more. Like, make it more her movie than it is about the entire team's movie. Like, really try, have Wonder Woman even overshadow Batman. And under normal circumstances, like, that would be insane to think about. But considering this is the DC extended universe, and yeah, it did kind of screw up with Batman's image, and especially with Superman's image. And I mean, like, I really do mean that last part right over there. Considering that, well, Justice League did spend a lot of money just to use their CGI to cover Superman's freaking mustache. You know, it is crazy, but, you know, it does make sense nowadays. And the way that Teen Titans Go to the Movies capture that, it's just honestly fantastic. And also the other part that I really do like at the end is actually the tagline where they say Teen Titans Go to the Movies, where if Aquaman gets a movie, then literally anybody can. And let's be honest, even if you are a massive DC fan, even if you are a Teen Titans Go hater, you gotta admit, that line is actually funny, and there are some truth to it. Like, yeah, if we are gonna get a movie with frickin' Aquaman, then you know what? Like, why not have Teen Titans Go get their own movie? And I mean, it is true that, like, we are at the point that literally any movie can actually happen. I mean, if we are at the stage where we literally had an emoji movie, then how is a Teen Titans Go movie sound out of hand? You know, why does that sound ridiculous? It does make sense. I mean, we are at the stage that no matter how strange or stupid an idea sounds, like, literally anything can happen at this point. Now, I will give it, though, I'm not saying that this is an amazing trailer. I'm not going to say that, judging by this trailer, this is going to be one of the best animated features of the year. I'm not really saying that because there are some things that I would criticize about, and there are some low marks as well. First and foremost, I would say, is actually going to be regarding the animation, and I am a bit disappointed that the quality of the animation right over here is going to be a bit of the same as it is in the TV show, and that really does hurt the image of this movie, and I can mean that both figuratively and literally, considering that whenever you would see an animated series make the jump from the small to the big screen, usually they would have a massive upgrade in the quality of their animation. Case in point, we recently had My Little Pony the movie, and that one, the quality of the animation there is a lot stronger than what you would find on television, showing some more smooth hand-drawn animation. But this is not really the case of Teen Titans Go to the Movies. This looks like the same thing that you would get on television, and that could really hurt on the quality of the film and maybe not get as much, like, great reviews, or it won't get as much credit visually, per se. But there is also another thing that I would criticize in here, and that would actually be regarding the fart joke. And the fart joke, yeah, it is a little bit lowbrow that there would be this one entire part of the trailer that's devoted just to a giant fart. I mean, really, it's a bit juvenile in its joke, but then again, this is the kind of humor that you would normally expect in other lowbrow animated features that we are going to get this year, including Sherlock Gnomes and Hotel Transylvania 3. So it is getting a lot of crap for that fart joke, but it is mainly because it is from Teen Titans Go. Like, maybe it would have gotten a bit more of a pass if it were done in something like Sherlock Gnomes or Hotel Transylvania 3. So it's not necessarily the joke itself, it's more the target that's actually doing the joke. But then again, I will give credit that for that fart joke, the payoff actually does work. Like, when the characters are talking afterwards about the fact that the big villain actually farted, then I actually thought it was nice. And it almost actually did, kind of made it forgivable to actually make that fart joke, because the payoff of it was actually quite humorous, and I actually kind of enjoyed it. So I would say that overall, yes, I actually did enjoy this trailer of Teen Titans Go to the Movies, despite the massive hate that it's already been getting. And yeah, I really do mean it, that people are already armed and prepared to really name this one of the, like, not the one of, but the worst movie of 2018. Like, I'm already on the YouTube channel, and I could see that the the dislike bar is already a lot more prominent than the like bar. Maybe not as much as something like the Emoji Movie or other Sony Animation films like Peter Rabbit or The Star would get, but you could tell, like, the majority is from the haters that passionately hate Teen Titans Go. And I would say that the funny thing about all this is that even I'm actually getting a lot of crap. Like, I mentioned on social media a bit that I actually did enjoy this trailer of Teen Titans Go to the Movies, and I've already gotten some comments of people that are furious at me that I express a bit of optimism, or I express some positivity towards something related to Teen Titans Go. I mean, I've already got enough crap as it is from people who they wanted to look at me as if I would be their savior, and I would treat Teen Titans Go to the Movies like I would with the Emoji Movie. But then they would discover that they're just angry at me because I'm not hard enough on Teen Titans Go. I'm not giving it the treatment that they want. I'm not really saying the things that they want to hear. But you know what? Screw the haters. I actually like this trailer. I thought it was funny. I thought it was enjoyable. And yeah, that's my opinion, honestly. I had a lot of fun, and I genuinely laugh at this. So yeah, honestly, this was actually a good trailer. And it actually is more successful, like I said before, compared to Sherlock Gnomes and Hotel Transylvania 3. So I actually do feel that there might be a good chance this could actually turn out to be a pretty good movie. And if you guys are interested to check out Teen Titans Go, or if you want to try to legitimize your criticisms about Teen Titans Go to the Movies, then all you have to do is just buy yourself a ticket and go watch the film when it comes out on July 28th. And that is all that I've got for this week, so let me just say thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can also go ahead and find more of my work at film-book.com. All you have to do is search for Mathieu Brunet or The Animation Podcast. You can also go ahead and find me on Twitter and animat505. Now, if you have listened to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, do you mind doing us a little bit of a favor and rate and review this episode? And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that like button on our video and leave us a comment on your thoughts about the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later, dudes!